Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
We're back.
It's been 3 weeks since you've been here.
It's been quite a vacation.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's great to be able to just record 3 episodes in a row.
I know. Then. So anybody who has been listening to us, I think there's at least 5 of you out there. We had a series of interviews that Sean went to while he was at the Quiet Adventure Symposium.
Mm-hmm.
And nah, because we had so much recording, we took 3 weeks off.
What's this wee business?
Well,
they still had to get up on online somehow.
But you still had that part to do.
But
you always have that part.
Yeah.
I just do the talking part.
Yeah, do the talking parts. Talking parts and the drinking beers part.
Exactly. Hey, I buy the beer. But anyways, so yeah, we've been away. And I got 3 Tuesdays back. Was it 3 or was it just 2?
No, it was just 2.
Just 2. And so, yeah, so we're back. We're back on the microphones.
Woo!
Glass is back.
Yeah, yes.
So now we're...
I could use a nap.
I tried to take one this afternoon before I came here, but it didn't work.
I was halfway to one before you showed up.
But yeah, back in class.
Yeah, how are things going?
Good. It's, we're...
Spring has sprung.
It keeps hinting at summer, but then... What, it snowed the last couple days.
Yeah, that snow, rain, slush, sleet.
And apparently garbage. Sudbury Wawa got like 40 centimeters or something.
Really?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not living up there. I don't have any snow around my house at all. All gone.
It's all gone.
Oh, yeah. By the way, this last time I came here, I had to park on the snowbank because you don't shovel your side of the road. So I'd always have to park on the snowbank. Anyways, I didn't have to do that
today. I shovel it, but then the
snowfall fills it up
so nicely, fills it back in.
Anyways, so it was nice to see I didn't have to park in a snowbank.
Well, there was somebody parked there earlier, so you're lucky you're actually parking there, pal.
But yeah, so my plans for summer camping and tripping are well underway.
Yeah, right now we're looking at what we're supposed to be doing, and we're going to be gone like 6 weeks out of this summer.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's going to be, we take 6 weeks off or do we try to record and...
It'll be a challenge. It'll be a challenge because I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks in July. You're going
to
be gone.
Well, you'll have a phone. You could phone in.
I guess I could.
Do you have a laptop?
Yes, I do have that too.
You can phone in from wherever you are.
I just got to phone it in.
Yeah, just going to mail it in. Here, just get somebody that sounds like me to read this.
Yeah, read these lines.
Yeah.
They'll have to practice the hello.
Yeah, everybody practices that.
So, yeah.
So, where are you going?
We will be doing, so I'm going to be doing a bike trip with the boys. Going to do southwestern Ontario. All along that way, down from Tobermory down to like Windsor type thing.
Okay.
And then after that, that's just 4 or 5 days. And then me and the family are going to tour around the Maritimes and visit family and go to Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and check a bunch of stuff out. So we're building the plan.
We did the Nova Scotia thing a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
We drove out and did... circumnavigated all of Nova Scotia over the course of 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I had a blast doing it. Saw so much.
Mm-hmm.
We've never been out that way. Well, Tracy has been.
Yeah.
I've never been that far.
Is that when you got your the whale blowing rainbows video?
Yeah, whale rainbow. Mm-hmm. If you go to YouTube and type in whale rainbow,
mm-hmm.
you'll see a 22-second video of a whale that breaches beside the boat.
Yeah.
And when it sprays its spray, it looks like it's shooting a rainbow out of its blowhole. Yeah. Best 22-second video I ever had. It went viral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paid for your vacation.
Everything I made off of that viral video paid for our entire 3-week vacation to the East Coast. Can't get any better than that.
Yeah. Well, the rules are changing, so definitely can't get better than that.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely changed since then. I think it was because I was so great.
Yeah.
You, that's it. Hey, wait a minute. Who's this guy? Let's change all the rules now. Yeah, that's it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Yeah, I love it out there. It's there was a lot to see, and definitely
tons
didn't
to see.
Spend
the
enough.
The problem is there's so much space. Like, you can't see it all. You can't see everything that you want to see. So you pick the high points, and the high points are like far apart.
Yeah.
So,
well, and the people that own the company I work at are from Cape Breton.
Okay.
Right. So, we went up there and they happened to be there at the time. So we stopped in to see them, and, then we went around, we did the whole Cape Breton thing there. And then down south through Halifax did a couple. The one thing I wanted to see in Halifax was the glass blowing place.
Oh, okay.
And they were cleaning their kilns the day we were there.
Oh.
So there was nothing to be seen.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed. So we went to the brewery instead and sorrows. Went to Kejimkujik National Park there and everything. So there's Digby, that's where we did the whale cruise there. If you have a dog, there's I know there's a place in Digby. When we went down to do the whale watching cruise, there's a kennel that will you can put your dog in for the day there.
So you don't have to put it on a boat and get the dog all seasick.
Well, because you're not allowed to take the dogs on the boat.
Oh.
So you didn't have to leave your dog in the car. So we did that. We went out and did a whole bunch of stuff for the day and came back and picked her up from the kennel. And she had a great time playing with other dogs and stuff. That's cool when you can do that. You can take your dog with you on these vacations, but then there's certain parts that you can't, but there's kennels and stuff nearby that you can put them in for the day.
Right on.
Doggy daycare.
Okay.
Whatever they call it.
Yeah. Cool.
So, yeah.
That's actually not a bad plan.
No.
Because there's a lot of people do travel with their pets.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep.
It works.
So, anyway, yeah, you guys have a blast out. Your kids, they've been out there.
We've been out there
a
few times. So, we see different stuff different. I'm from the Maritimes, right? So, it's the most common thing to go to. The problem is if we were to go and see stuff out west, we'd either have to fly or drive for days upon days upon days. But, you know, like the Maritimes, there's too much to see in one trip. So, this will be the fourth trip with the family. So, yeah.
Always new stuff to see.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to go back and see stuff that we saw before and didn't get a good look at. We're going to go back again.
Do the tidal bores?
We always do the tidal bores. So, one of these, I'm thinking about seeing if I can get them on a, because you can do the tidal bore in a, like not rafting, but one of those speedboat raft things.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about that. I haven't told them about it, but I'm thinking about just booking it and making it happen.
Here, put this life jacket on. Why? You'll see. Here, sit in this little raft.
Yeah.
Here. No, don't worry. No, we're just going to go for a little doodly-doo.
Well, it's not dangerous.
No.
It's just something different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They'll like it.
Yeah, maybe we'll get stuck in the mud and have to walk up in our hips and 3 foot deep mud to get ashore. And
so be it. So you're just doing New Brunswick and Nova Scotia?
New Brunswick's Nova Scotia. I consider Cape Breton a different province, but it's Nova Scotia, Cape Breton. But we're going to do Cape Breton again. We've been there a lot of times. I like it there. And so, yeah, so this summer, not PEI, but maybe next summer. we definitely want to do a couple, like we did a week in Newfoundland when Stella was a year old, and it was nice. It was really nice, but Newfoundland is not something you'd do in a week.
Nope.
You need 2 to 3 weeks to do it.
We spent 3 weeks.
Yeah. There's just too much to see. Yep.
We found an old flour mill.
Oh, yeah?
Off the beaten path, and they still make flour, different types of flour.
Yeah.
And we brought back some regular white flour and some, I think, buckwheat flour. And they like grind it and sell it in little canvas bags.
There's one in Bowmanville, north of Bowmanville, does that too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So you're saying I could have saved all that money and just could have gone to Bowmanville? All that wear and tear and. Yeah. Oh. Thanks for telling me now. Any camping trips or is just that one?
This will be a mixture of camping and hotels, depending on where we are.
Oh, sort of like your Wabakimi trip.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
I bring that up whenever I can.
I'm like, wait a second. Oh.
I'm picturing camping and, yeah, and cottages.
It was nice being in those cabins. It was a nice relief from the trip.
I would think so.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. We'll probably do late August before the kids are back to school to get back up to like Clarny or Tomogamy or something.
Before everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're trying to get further and further north and west each year. So maybe this will be the year I get out to Quetico or something.
That's a 24-hour drive.
I know. That's the problem. That's too far, right?
Nah.
Well, it is for kids.
Not really.
Maybe if I knock them out.
No, we used to do those big trips with R2. We actually had, in the back of a Ford Ranger, we had two car seats mounted.
Yeah.
And they faced each other because we had the seats that faced each other, not the bench thing. And we drove up to Timmins and then round through to Thunder Bay and down around to Sault Ste. Marie, back down to Toronto.
It's a long drive.
Kids loved it. You stop in at the truck stops and you grab the truckers magazines.
Oh.
So they're in the back looking. They're looking at pictures of all these giant semi trucks. Peterbilts, Kenworths. I'll keep them busy for an hour.
Yeah, yeah. That's 1 hour or 24. Right?
Yeah. I think you just give them. Tell them to put in some headphones or something, listen to music. And
well, that's, yeah, get them to watch a movie or something.
Yeah. And it goes by super fast.
Yeah.
So you know where I'd like to go?
Where is that?
Canberra.
Canberra.
Over
Australia.
In Australia. You know why? I'm going to tell you why. It's a pursuit that goes by different names. It's variously called skimming, splash and dash, or balloon sailing, where a hot air balloonist with skill and experience lands the balloon on water and sails with the wind behind them. The balloon is sitting on top of the water, not in it, explains pilot Justin Galbraith. You can just see the water come in the bottom of the basket, he says. As it starts to fill up slowly, you put a burn in and it drains out. And that's how you sort of maintain your buoyancy.
That's interesting.
That sounds pretty cool. Can you picture being on this big lake and seeing hot air balloons like skimming across the surface? Canberra is a city with a cool, calm climate that also sits in a bowl at the top of a hill. It's that combination that makes it the perfect place for ballooning, kayaking, and stand-up paddleboarding to come together on Lake Burley Griffin. So you're thinking ballooning, kayaking, and stand-up paddleboarding. Right in my head when I'm reading that, I'm thinking this has something to do with Red Bull.
Yep.
Somebody's being dropped out of a kayak from 100 feet. Right? That's just, you know. The Galbraith family, Chris, Danny, and their two children, Justin and Amanda, got into ballooning 44 years ago. Amanda, now a balloon pilot herself, says it's an activity that traverses the city. We love that moment when you can get the balloon onto the water and all of those people are around you and it's taken the festival from being just on a grass in the Parliamentary Triangle to one of the highlights for us every year. So if you look at Canberra, it's this big city, and right in the middle, there's this big roundabout-looking thing with the parliamentary
giant
thing.
Giant ring road, parliament.
Parliamentary building is right there. And then there's the big lake with the rivers.
It's a big lake.
It is a big lake right in the middle of the town or city. Paul Yurick is a kayaker who regularly shares the lake with balloonists and first hitched a ride with Mr. Galbraith in his red kayak almost a decade ago. So I flew over the back of him, let the balloon cool, and cooled a lot longer than I would normally do. And as I came down, I left it to the last minute to actually put in a burn because I thought, I'll give this guy a bit of a fright. Could you imagine not paying attention?
Whoa, 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 and all of
a sudden this balloon just... It started a strong friendship and something that has gained a huge following. I never seen anything like this before, so I paddled up to the basket, started having a chat. The next thing, I'm holding onto the basket and being towed down the lake.
That's so cool.
It's been wonderful to be part of this event. that has been able to provide so many people the opportunity to experience something so unique and enjoyable for all ages from a water's perspective. Now, Tracy and I, on our first anniversary, went on a hot air balloon ride.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, I remember
we did the champagne breakfast thing and whatnot. Problem with this story is that our first anniversary, like our anniversary is in November.
Yeah.
But you get the nice snow scenery
and
you know, that sort of deal. So being in a hot air balloon is pretty cool. Seeing them, everybody loves to see them.
Yeah.
Right? Amanda Galbraith says, it's gained in popularity when on one crazy day, Justin decided to throw out the handling line. It's a 300-foot line in our basket that's intended to assist the pilots if they ever need to receive support from the crew to land. She says, Justin just threw it out the back and told everyone on the water nearby to grab a hold of it. From a few hangers on, it's gained a following with hundreds of people being towed.
That's hilarious.
There's a few challenges to sailing a balloon on a crowded Lake Burley Griffin. Ballooning is three-dimensional downwind sailing. That is what ballooning is, Justin explains. You're always flying downwind, but we use the layers of air at different altitudes to get the steerage. On the water, it's a different matter. We can't steer when we're on the water. It says the rule is don't be in front, be beside or behind the hot air balloon. It's the standard sort of mantra, he says. Amanda describes it as the world's slowest water sport, particularly when we have the kayakers holding on to the rope because that slows us down with all their weight. But ballooning is just slow in general.
That sounds so
fun. How cool would that
be? I know, right?
Just sitting there holding on a rope and this hot air balloon is just right on the surface of the water, towing you down the lake. You got to have some good skills to be keeping that balloon just right.
And I relate best with Lake Ontario. It can't be Lake Ontario water because that's like, it's like either freezing or I think in the peak of summer in the shallow spots, it might get up to 20 degrees. But for the most part,
just don't fall in.
It's a deep lake, so it stays cold.
Yeah.
So I'd be worried about doing it on Lake Ontario. Freezing.
Well, I don't think it would be.
It's very cool.
Yeah. I think anywhere in the summer, if you get some nice breeze to keep you going and you just zip right across. Something like this down near Toronto Harbor would be cool, except for that airport thing.
It would be neat. Oh, yeah. Well, there is that. Watch out for the airplanes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a balloon coming through.
But do you have the, not parasailers, but, you know, the skimboarders? Anyways, they use these kite surfing.
Oh, kite surfs, yeah.
So, like, imagine kite surfing with, like, a canoe or with a kayak or whatever, because you can get smaller kite surfing kites. Mm-hmm. And I've seen and heard of people doing it out of a canoe or out of a kayak. And so it does work. People do it. But it's not as common. Not as common because you don't have the same kind of control because you need the...
You want the board.
Yeah, the board. Definitely need the board.
Yeah.
But what it reminded me of seeing this balloon thing, and it made me think of people doing it from kite surfing from a kayak or canoe. I have seen videos of... Do you know how you can go heli-skiing?
Mm-hmm.
Helicopter takes you up top of the mountain, drops you off, you ski down.
Yep.
I've seen guys that use those kite surfing kites, and they pull themselves to the top of the mountain, fold it up, pack it up, and ski back down. So you don't pay the charge of a helicopter, but you get they move fast going up these mountains. You get the wind hitting the mountain and pulling really fast. So it's like, just be careful you don't go off the other side.
Why? You got a parachute.
Yeah.
Where you go? Oh, about 5,000 kilometers that way?
He went that away. But yeah,
that'd be cool. Just to see it.
So it would just be in the basket and have the water well up around your toes and stuff.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like. It's just,
just
skimming the surface.
That'd be so fun.
Right?
And ballooning. I've never been in a balloon, but I've seen videos. It just seems so serene and quiet. Mm-hmm. You just hear.
Oh, it's not quiet.
Well, you hear the blast of the
you hear the wind going by too, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not so loud that you can't have a decent conversation.
Yeah, exactly. It's only when they're burning that, only when they're raising the temperature that you can hear the burners go. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's just quiet and calm.
Yeah.
You're just floating along.
It was a lot of fun. Hmm. But, yeah, just to be sitting there, what are you doing? Could you imagine the video of somebody just FaceTiming? Hey, what are you doing right now? I'm doing this. And then it's like a long line of boats, canoes, and kayaks out ahead of you. Being towed by a...
Yeah.
And then you get to the end of the lake, and you're thinking...
Okay.
Oh, now I got to paddle back.
So the people who grab onto the rope, it's like you don't have no control of where you're going.
No.
So, oops, sorry, we're dropping you in the middle of the lake. Swim back.
But depending on which way they're going, there's two massive bridges that cross that lake.
There's that a problem too.
So we're going up. We're going up. You people let go or... Or don't.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to think that they take into account wind direction and...
They would have to. They're smart. They obviously, they've been doing this a while, mm-hmm. and they've been doing it a lot. So it's just, I would love to try it. I'd love to do it.
Right. Like I say, the first thing I heard of water balloon. The first thing I heard of hot air balloon and kayak, the first mm-hmm. thing I'm thinking is somebody's going over. You know, like they're hauling them up there and
yeah.
Woo! I gotta think somebody's probably done that though. They're just not saying so.
Done what?
Held on to it while it was going up.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it's happened. Yeah. It's had to have happened.
And then just drop. No!
You can't let go now. We're 3,000 feet up.
See you, suckers! staying with the Australian theme.
Yes.
So, Tuesday, the day today that we're recording this, or if you're listening to this 2 days ago, the Australian Olympic Committee had to submit some of the reports on where they're going to hold some of the events and stuff like that for the 2032 Olympic Games. And when it comes to paddling events...
Was this just announced?
Well, they've been talking about this for a little bit, but yeah, today was the day they had to put in their announcements and their findings and their suggestions and all that sort of thing. A crocodile-inhabited river in central Queensland is reportedly set to host the 2032 Olympic and Paralympic Games rowing events. The Queensland government will likely announce Rockhampton as the host of rowing events at the 2032 Games when it unveils its final infrastructure blueprint. Now, I looked for everything today to see if what they'd said. When I was looking, they didn't have anything up yet.
Oh, okay.
Rockhampton's Fitzroy River is a regular site for crocs, with rangers trapping a 4-meter crocodile lurking upstream just 2 years ago.
That's a big...
That's a big crocodile. Keep wanting to say alligators.
Yeah, I know.
Liberal politicians and business leaders have urged using the river for the games rather than more costly alternatives would save the state millions of dollars. Yeah, let's save the money and we lose an athlete or two.
It's a risk. It's a risk.
Advocates have said any crocodiles in the river would need to be rehomed first. How do you rehome an alligator or a crocodile?
I know, right?
Let's catch them and let's put them... It's not like you can see him running around like a bear or something. In January, National Queensland Senator Matt Canavan said, "We believe that moving the rowing and canoeing to an existing facility in the center of Rockhampton can save probably up to $100 million.
Oh, well, if you lose an athlete or two, it sounds like it's worth it now.
Right? Rowing Australia and Rowing Queensland have reportedly and sent an urgent letter to the state government pleading to keep the rowing event in a state and prevent it from being moved to an existing facility in Penrith in Sydney's west. So Rowing Australia and Rowing Queensland are supporting this. But the letter said the government also needed to ensure any venue they choose complies with the stringent technical requirements required for fair and exciting racing.
Huh.
Well, throwing in a couple crocodiles is going to make it exciting. Be ready for some exciting paddling events if the crocodiles are included. Those competitors will definitely earn their gold medals.
It's an incentive to go faster.
Right. Go faster, you fool. Why did they cut 10 seconds off that world record?
We have never paddled so fast in our lives.
Right? We're going to combine the canoeing and water skiing event.
There's a water ski club on that stretch of that river. So they're used to having people in the water there. I think just if you're going to have...
Doesn't mean it's a successful water skiing club. Their members dwindle.
Yes. But I guess if they're used to it, if they're... I think the concern would be... The concern could become all the people that come to see these events and maybe end up in the water or on the water's edge. I think the venues themselves will be safe, but I think you might lose a few tourists.
Well, having said all of this, you got to look at some of the golf tournaments that happen.
Oh, yeah.
Down in Florida and such, and there's an alligator on the...
Yeah.
On the water hazard.
The guys at work, a lot of them every year go down to a lot of these places. And they do come back with stories of alligators on the golf course.
But you can see them. It's not like you're paddling, race.
Yes.
And that's it for the Netherlands.
The Netherlands team is out. Wow. So that could add it's like a Running Man sort of theme to...
Does this not take it to, like, extreme sports now? Yeah,
I think so.
Is this not this a different competition altogether?
This is definitely a Red Bull sport.
Oh, see? Red Bull is just the theme of the night. Okay, so there's the balloon pull, then the crocodile rowing. Oh, what else can we throw in there? Yeah.
Could be very exciting.
Next up, kangaroo boxing.
They're going to be constantly reporting on crocodile sightings. Oh, there was a crocodile sighting with 500 meters of the competitors. And
right. Well, I think more along the lines of it would be the audience, spectators.
Yeah, they're going to be at risk.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And how do you now, the public won't put up with just culling them, so there's going to have to be a, as they call it, a rehoming.
Yeah.
How do you catch a crocodile without injuring it?
Carefully?
Carefully.
A big cage?
Yeah, that's insane.
Chickens.
They're going to start months ahead and just dwindle the population, take them way up river or to a different river, not the same river, because they'll swim back.
They have to sort of put nets across the river or something. Block bigger... Not block fish and stuff, but at least block bigger animals.
Yeah.
The size of a crocodile, for instance.
They're going to spend some money on some sonar and side scan sonars and people with big fish finders out there and reporting.
Looking for volunteers with boats to do the course every morning before the competition starts.
You have to make sure the area is clear.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like the last thing you want in the media is losing a rower, right? It's like, oops, because it's like, yeah, that'll shut things down pretty quick,
right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I was just paddling in my. I was in the fourth heat of the day, and all the guy next to me's gone.
But now I'm in the lead.
Now I was second place up until. Yeah, see you in a while, crocodile.
Well,
that'll be interesting to keep. Like I say, there's a serious part of this, but you got to look at the funny side of it too.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that.
I'll let you start, but I have questions right off the bat.
Okay, what are your questions?
Well, who bought who recently? What kayak company bought?
Oh, that was Jackson.
Jackson bought somebody, or somebody bought Jackson?
Yeah, they. Oh,
Wave.
That was 3 weeks
not
ago.
Wave
now.
Sport.
Oh, you're going to make me remember stuff, aren't you?
No, but okay. It's just because of this builder. I didn't know if they were involved in the deal, but it doesn't matter.
Does matter now.
Because with them going with a pro line, it makes me wonder if competition's heating up within the kayak industry because of certain moves.
Jackson bought Eddyline.
Eddyline.
That was it.
So Jackson bought Eddyline, and Eddyline is mostly roto-molded
kayaks.
Yeah, but not sport kayaks, I don't think. I don't think Eddyline does... They do mostly sit on tops, yeah. don't they?
And when Jackson is all the whitewater.
Jackson's the
like
competitive
yeah.
whitewater.
Yeah. And so this is Old Town.
Yes.
And they've launched 5 new watercraft
mm-hmm.
this year. They've unveiled, they call it the next generation of watercraft, offering feature-rich options for anglers and recreational kayakers that redefine how they experience on-water pursuits. They have the Sportsman line, and it's going... Pro, P-R-O, they put it in big capital yeah. letters, with 2 new models, the PDL 120 Pro and the E-PDL 120 Pro.
It's got an electric motor, I bet.
Mm-hmm. It's usually when you get the little small E, yeah. that seems to be it anymore. Designed for anglers who need customization and propulsion flexibility. For recreational users, 3 new sit-on-top additions to the Ocean Kayak line. Includes features designed to help them go farther, play harder, and extend those dreamy summer days.
Huh.
Hmm? Hmm. For over 125 years, Old Town has continuously focused on product innovations that reflect customers' preferred ways of spending time on the water. Steady rise in kayak fishing and outdoor recreation popularity continues to catapult the brand's dedication to kayak innovation for on-water enthusiasts. Enthusiasts. So the Old Town Sportsman PDL 120 Pro and EPDL.
What does PDL stand for? Does it? Do they ever say professional something line? Anyways, you keep talking. I'll look.
Why don't you just look? The all-new 12-foot Sportsman line offerings are based on the line's most popular platform and are a product of extensive feedback from consumers, product engineers, and pro staff. So they're asking everybody, what do you want to see in these things, and what could we do to these to make them better? The hallmark of the new Sportsman PDL 120 Pro and EPDL 120 Pro is the overhauled watercraft interior design by Old Town's engineers to maximize functionality, offer customization options, provide ample storage solutions, and enhance interior space while maintaining the existing footprint. Both Pro models are available in 2 exclusive new colors, Sierra and Storm. Everything's about interior. Sounds like they're building a car.
Well, it's because they're adding a lot of features, and mm-hmm. and if for people who either are either professional anglers or want to call themselves professional anglers, then there's going to be wet wells and dry wells and you know all the different form like the PDL, by the way, is paddle drive line.
Yeah.
So a lot of these are paddle drive. Some of them are e-paddle drives. So you can see, I've seen a lot of setups. There's a couple guys that I watch who do ocean kayak fishing. Mm-hmm. And there's all these, there's so many places to, like they'll have 6 rods coming off the side of the kayak. And
yeah.
So it's like these, I don't know, when you're talking some of these setups, it's like, well, the kayak alone is going to be like 5 or 8 grand. And all the fishing gear that and tackle they have on board is another 5 to 8 grand. And
yeah, and then the cooler and the place to keep your fish and everything yeah, like that yeah. and your seat and
yeah,
all your electronics you want to put on there.
And they're very stable.
Yeah.
Like I've seen these guys get hit by sharks and they didn't go over.
And
very
marlin.
Stable.
So those guys fighting the marlin.
Yeah.
For anglers seeking propulsion flexibility, the EPDL features manual pedal, power-assisted pedal, and fully motorized cruise control options.
Whoa.
Comes internally wired with all kill switches and includes a 36-volt, 200-amp lithium-ion power battery and charger. There's some serious... There's over the last 5 years, people have so started taking this so seriously.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
The angling kayaks yeah. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just, that's all. And we talked about it before. it's like a kayak version of a bass boat.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you can stand up on these things and everything, right? But yeah, and you can go out in the ocean and hit up some of these big game fish and not so game fish. Just big. There is a video going around over the last 2 weeks. Some guys on one of these fishing kayaks.
Catching a grouper?
No. Being followed by a shark.
Oh.
It went after his rudder.
Oh.
Because I thought, oh, it's got to be a killer whale, right?
Yeah.
Because they were going after the rudders on the yachts.
Yeah.
And then, no, it just kept following. He's trying to get back to shore, and he keeps looking, and there's this big, great white just doodly 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 doo. Where are you going, buddy? The 2025 additions to the Old Town Ocean Kayak line expand propulsion options to include the latest innovations, offering pedal, power-assisted pedal, and motorized compact watercraft. Three new sit-on-top additions free up hands for a cold drink, a camera, a fishing rod, or simply more fun. So these would be fishing kayaks for people like you and I that want to just go out and catch a fish.
Or get out into a marshy area and do some photography or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's not for these professional guys. The Old Town Ocean Kayak Malibu EPDL 120, the 12-foot watercraft takes fun on the water to a whole new level. It is designed for a multitude of environments and adventures. Water recreation fans can unlock new potential thanks to the EPDL drive technology adopted from the award-winning Old Town Sportsman Big Water EPDL 132 fishing craft. Users can seamlessly switch between manual, power-assisted, or fully motorized cruise control options. It's nice to go just paddle like a kayak or just pedal if you wanted, or the partial power assisted, which would be good if you're fighting a bigger fish sort of thing or something.
Or you get caught in the current or wind.
Well, and that's the full-on motorized, I'm thinking, for the winds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, you get it's just full-on face wind there. Just throw that on to
because I've
full
often
power and go.
I tend not to go too far from land because my main concern is if I'm out there in my kayak or I'm out there in my canoe and I don't have a second paddler, then if a wind comes up and I have to fight wind or a current to get back in, if there's a, say, what if you're on the ocean, you get a riptide and you get washed 5 kilometers out to sea or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think where I'd be a bit more comfortable in an ocean situation or comfortable in if wind were to pick up, if it had a electrical drive.
Yeah.
So I would, but again, I don't go in those situations, but I can see where people would find
would
it appealing.
That? Yeah. And accessibility options as
yes,
well.
Yes, absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
Right? Old Town Ocean Kayak Malibu Pedal. Time on the water is most enjoyable with others as the all-new Malibu Pedal T is a tandem pedal watercraft fully equipped with 2 instant forward and reverse PDL drives. It is based on the legendary Ocean Kayak line of sit-on-top kayaks and is spacious, comfortable, and highly capable. If I'm in a kayak, I don't want somebody in there with me.
So
that's why I take the canoe.
I was thinking the opposite. If I was to buy something like this, it would be a 2-seater because I'm not buying 2 of the things.
Wow.
So it's like if I want to go out with the wife or the kids, it's like, well, I'm not buying 2 of these suckers.
Yeah, but what if you want to go by yourself?
You can still pedal by yourself if it's a 2-seater.
It's going to be a lot harder.
Nah, not if it's an e-drive.
It's when you need to get a dog, buddy.
Dog.
And just sit in the seat.
Tow me.
Yeah. Teach the dog to paddle.
Get 6 dogs in the water in front of you.
Right?
Mush.
Old Town Ocean Kayak Sonata 106 MK. All new Sonata 106 MK represents summer vibes. Motorized 10-foot 6-inch watercraft features a fully integrated 45-pound thrust Minn Kota motor, wireless Bluetooth speakers, fun LED cockpit lighting. It is controlled with an intuitive forward and reverse throttle and an adjustable foot brace steering system for hands-free maneuverability. Party boat.
Where is their head office? So I'm thinking it's California.
Why?
Look at the names of the kayaks.
Oh, the Malibu, the Sonata.
Yeah. These are all
named after Malibu. just sounds full party boat, this last one, the Sonata. Yeah. You're not going to find one of those out on a nice quiet lake.
No.
That's for sure. So if you're looking for something new, to learn more about the all-new Sportsman PDL 120 Pro and ePDL 120 Pro and the recreational editions, visit oldtownwatercraft.com.
They're headquartered in Maine since 1898.
Yep. Yeah, the Old Town Canoes.
I know, but
Just give them funky
names. I just was assuming that they moved to California or something because they're naming everything. Maybe they're reaching out to the West Coasters would probably be a pretty big market for this in the fair wind and sea, the sandy shores of California
Malibu?
And Malibu. And
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe they just think, let's give it a warm location name. And then we'll take it out in the Atlantic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a Malibu. oldtownwatercraft.com. Check out everything they've got there. But yeah, if you're looking for some new stuff, I wasn't even looking at the pricing at this because, yeah.
They're going to be expensive.
You know they're going to be expensive.
I'm guessing in the $5,000 to $8,000 range.
Yeah. It'll be expensive no matter what you get. Time. As in the magazine that used to be a magazine is now just a... Because they're not a magazine anymore, right? They're just a website now.
Are they? Wait, what?
Yeah, didn't they get rid of like the actual paper Time magazine like years ago?
Yeah.
Now it's all just online?
I don't buy magazines anymore. So
not a lot of people do.
I'm one of the culprits that is causing them to shut down their paper
Way
distribution.
To go. Way to go, Derek. Tree hugger.
I know.
Time has released its list of world's greatest places for 2025, taking readers around the globe in their selection of best one-of-a-kind spots and experiences. According to Time, each year, Time solicits nominations of places, including hotels, cruises, restaurants, attractions, museums, parks, and more, from its international network of correspondents and contributors, as well as through the application process with an eye towards those offering new and exciting experiences. The result, 100 extraordinary destinations to stay and visit each year. 2025, only one Canadian place was selected.
Huh.
And it's right here in Ontario. The Canadian Canoe Museum.
Oh.
Located in Peterborough, Ontario, the Canadian Canoe Museum boasts the world's largest collection of paddled watercraft, kayaks, and canoes. More than 600.
Well, there you go.
As Time describes it, newly reopened in a 65,000 square foot building that is now aptly located lakeside, the Canadian Canoe Museum's design evokes the hull of a canoe and is undoubtedly an aesthetic upgrade from its previous home in a former outboard motor factory.
Yes, yeah.
Property sits on 5.3 acres of waterfront, including a shoreline with docks and boardwalks that serve as a launching point to explore Little Lake and the Otonabee River, both part of the 240-mile Trent Severn Waterway National Historic Site that winds through Ontario. Hmm. So, yeah, congratulations to the Canadian Canoe Museum for that. That's a pretty cool thing to be on a list for.
But there's nothing otherwise notable for...
For what?
For in Time. Nothing else in Canada.
No, apparently. Apparently that's it. Just the Peterborough, up in Peterborough. The
Colorado, Greenland, Mexico,
it.
Maine,
yeah.
North Carolina, California, Japan.
Yeah, as a list of the world's greatest places, some of the other spots include Populous in Denver, Colorado, HX Grand Greenland in Greenland, Banyan Tree Villa Valley do Guadalupe in Ensenada, Mexico, the Viewpoint Hotel in York, Maine, the Radical in Asheville, North Carolina, NHM Commons, Los Angeles, Nintendo Museum
of
in
course.
Uji, Japan, Gerbu in Dubai, Dogon in Washington, Bluey's World in Brisbane, Australia, and Little Village in Detroit, Michigan. I can't say I've heard of any of those.
I know. Like I
know what Bluey's World would be.
Yeah.
And the Nintendo Museum.
But the rest of them are... Why are they notable? Well, Canadian Museum is one of them.
Yeah.
That's amazing that it got the list.
Right?
Like,
woohoo!
You wouldn't think of these people would actually think of Watercraft.
They look at everything. Plus, like I say, it's nominations and all that, too.
That's right? True.
From a bunch of people that have been there and said, hey, this is really, really cool place to visit, check it out, that sort of thing.
I've seen, so we were at the, here's a good question for you.
Uh-oh.
So we've been, you and I have gone to the Kennedy Museum, and we got to look through the glass windows at all the stored boats.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen multiple people walking
certain times.
Is that just certain times?
Yeah. It's not open all the time. It's just certain events and that they open up the big vault with the racks and racks and racks of boats.
I thought, what, because we were there on a weekend it wasn't open, or is it like
it's because you were there.
close the doors, Derek's coming. And now that it's described as the similar to the hull of a canoe, I need to look at it again because I don't remember recognizing that. I know it's all rusted steel on the inside.
Yeah, take a look at it.
But I didn't think it looked like a canoe.
Maybe one that's been through an accident.
And rusted.
Yeah. So, again, congrats to them for making the list. We're heading back to, well, a lot of this is because we're heading back to Australia. Apparently, Australia is just everything today. Entertainment, sports, science.
Well, it's coming up. Do you know why it's coming up?
Why?
Because it's summer.
Well, it's summer
the tail end of summer.
Yeah.
So, of course, most of the news coming that we see is going to be out of Australia.
But this didn't have anything to do with it. I just think it's a really cool science-y thing to do with water, lakes, lagoons, estuaries, places you would paddle.
Yes.
And this came up. Have you ever heard of intermittently open and closed lakes and lagoons? iCalls.
I have. I didn't know they were called iCalls, but I've seen lots of videos online.
I don't think I've ever heard of this before.
So... I found it interesting because when I was reading this, when you sent it to me, I thought, oh, I know about these. And what I've commonly seen, and a lot of my questions that I've always had were answered in the material that's here.
Really?
Because I had a lot of questions about it.
Really?
And we'll get to that soon. But what I found interesting is that a lot of people will purposely burst them.
Mm-hmm.
And then get on them with surfboards and run them with whitewater kayaks and stuff like that.
Yeah. Intermittently, and this is the science portion of our show today.
Yes.
Intermittently closed and open lakes and lagoons, iCalls, I-C-O-L-Ls, are particularly dynamic form of estuary characterized by periodic entrance closures to the ocean. Closure occurs when a subaerial sand berm stabilizes across the entrance channel during times of low fluvial discharge. Now that everybody's asleep, iCalls are of global importance as they provide valuable ecological habitats for many species and are associated with a wide range of management issues due to their cycle of entrance, closure, and opening. iCalls are found to be more widespread globally than previously described, with 1,477 of these estuaries being identified. This constitutes an estimated 3% of the world's estuaries and 15% of all estuaries along microtidal coastlines. iCalls are concentrated along microtidal to low mesotidal coastlines in the mid-latitudes and predominantly on coasts with temperate climates. I am not going to get into what every single little thing.
Well,
we will be here for a whole entire
There's a couple words that you
episode.
Should have recognized. So fluvial tsunami, so they call it fluvial discharge.
Yeah.
A fluvial discharge is where, like, the St. John River in St. John, New Brunswick, the tides come in and the water rapids go either inwards or outwards. It's a fluvial.
Yeah.
And but what's interesting about this is these things will form, and there's a place in Bowmanville where it forms too. But so in the dry season, you don't have a lot of water flow. You have the lake thundering in, creates this sandbar that pushes the entrance to the whatever creek or river is coming out, and it creates a dam.
Yeah.
And then water holds back behind the dam in the rainy season. Oftentimes in the rainy season, it'll wash them out. Or somebody
has access to the
and what you do is it has most of these, they consider them, most of these I-calls they're considered on ocean, where they talk about a mix of fresh and salt water.
Yeah.
And we'll get to what my questions were, because again, I've seen a lot of videos of these where people burst them open and go surfing. Mostly a lot of people just surf on them.
So an I-call is a kind of estuary where fresh water from rivers and lakes inland runs out to meet the sea. Unlike your usual estuary, however, I-calls aren't always open to the ocean. Sometimes a sand berm forms across their entrance. This effectively closes these lakes and lagoons to the ocean, sometimes for years at a time. Whether the sand berm is forming, breaking down, or even there at all varies depending on conditions. Waves are constantly trying to build up the sand berm across the entrance, while the fresh water is constantly trying to wash the sand away. These push and pull processes results in a natural, irregular cycle of I-calls opening and closing. The biodiversity of I-calls has adapted to these cycles. Many of these I-calls are near people, and the natural cycles of these systems don't always match the community's needs. Every I-call has its own unique cycle of opening and closing. Some will naturally open more often than others, and some will rarely open at all. Generally, how often and when they open depends on rainfall. I-calls close in drier periods when there is little to no freshwater inflow from upstream. Waves can then build the sand berm up faster than the fresh water can wash it away, and the I-call closes, like you said. I-calls open during wet periods, especially floods, where the sudden influx of water causes the I-call to overtop the sand berm. While this happens, the water quickly breaks through the berm, scouring a channel through to the ocean, and as the water drops, the waves begin to build up the sand berm again, and the cycle starts over. I-calls have more water flowing from upstream tend to be open more often, while I-calls with only small freshwater flows tend to be closed more often. So why opening artificially can cause problems?
And this is my question.
And this is your question.
Mm-hmm.
Ecosystems. Lots of biodiversity has adapted to and relies on the natural opening and closing cycles. Wetlands and aquatic vegetation like seagrasses rely on a certain level of lake water, inundation, and salinity to survive. Regularly opening lakes below their natural breakout level can cause a drop in water levels. These strands some areas, and the amount of habitat available for fish and other marine creatures shrinks. More frequently, open I-calls also generally have higher salinity since tides flush them more regularly. A switch from being a closed, largely freshwater ecosystem to an artificially maintained, open, salty ecosystem can change the whole biodiversity of an I-call.
You can see how that'd be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I say a problem, so a lot of these open and closed naturally. But when you interrupt the natural cycle is where the problems arise.
Yeah. Now, I did read some parts where they actually have built man-made canals that are closed.
Mm.
And then during times when it's threatening to flood local towns,
they open it up. Yeah.
So that way they do it. But on the regular, it just lets it
exactly
do its own thing.
And in some cases, they're trying to maintain the biodiversity by putting the canals in, but also prevent flooding.
Mm-hmm.
And And sometimes it's just a lot of these historical things where people have built docks and have boats and whatever. They don't want to change the water level too much, so they've been forced to put in the canals, because if it bursts open middle of summer, suddenly people who would be swimming or you know, with fish species would suddenly get washed out, and then you have a mix of fresh and salt water. And
Bob's Cottage no longer has a...
has a dock.
Has a lake.
Yeah.
water quality. When there isn't a lot of fresh water flowing in, artificial openings can also cause a phenomenon called decanting. This is when only the surface water of an eyecall drains when the entrance is opened. When decanting happens, the only water left in the lake is an extremely low oxygen or hypoxic bottom waters. This leftover hypoxic water isn't suitable for a lot of animals and can cause large-scale fish kills.
So if it's one that doesn't normally open, and you open it in the middle of summer because you want to go surfing,
mm-hmm.
you're going to cause a big kill-off because the water becomes hypoxic.
Yep.
So that was one of the questions I always had, is like, what is this damage when these kids do this? Like, what is the damage to these areas?
Yeah, just the top water getting out. While fish kills can still happen with natural openings are generally associated with flooding. This mixes the surface water with the hypoxic water and flushes the eyecall. It makes it more likely the water will remain healthy for the fish and other creatures that live there. The result is the artificial openings can actually make the water quality worse if the eyecall remains closed. Fish. Apart from the fish kills and the poor water quality, there's no evidence that opening eyecalls helps fish populations. In fact, opening them to the ocean can mean fish are more exposed to predators and less successful at reproducing. Artificial openings can also interrupt natural fish cycles that the fish have developed to benefit from natural openings in eyecalls. Openings at the wrong time can lead to young fish ending up at sea before they're strong enough to survive. Science now shows that opening eyecalls outside of their natural patterns does more harm than good. However, when communities don't understand how the ecosystem naturally behaves, it can lead to a conflict between the environmental needs and the social needs of the community. Luckily, most local governments in Australia, and that's how I came across this, because mm-hmm.
It's very common there.
In Australia, now have management plans in place to make sure that eyecalls are only opened to reduce flooding during rainfall events. Using flood triggers makes sure the artificial openings only open when a natural opening would have happened anyway. This minimizes the potential negative ecological impacts from opening eyecalls. It is also illegal to open one without permission, although people still attempt it from time to time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When eyecalls open naturally or artificially, the shape of the land, local coastline changes quickly as new channel is established. Drones allowed researchers to map the shore prior, during, and after these opening events to learn how sand is being transported and deposited. Although satellite imagery can help researchers learn about this, opening events usually happen at the same time as rainfall. The entrance to the eyecall is therefore obscured by clouds. Drones allow more flexible and frequent coverage, even in cloudy weather, helping researchers track changes over time. Drones can also provide high-resolution elevation data using Structure from Motion, SFM, photogrammetry. Throwing big words at the end there. This can help researchers understand changes in the height of the sand berm, the profile of the surrounding beach, and response to waves or water flow.
Hmm.
So that's your science for the day.
Yes. It's super fascinating, though. Like I said, I've it's been years. I keep seeing these videos of kids breaking through the sand berm. And like I said, mostly surfing. Once in a while, you see somebody on a kayak. And so it's interesting to see it, because it starts as a little rivulet, because they dig it out with shovels and whatever, but eventually it turns into a massive flow of fresh water into the ocean. And I thought, it's kind of neat, and I've seen people get mad about it on video.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, what's the damage? What's the risk? Is there a risk? Is there damage? Apparently there is.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, when the water's coming down, the fresh water, yeah. And it's mixing with the...
Yeah.
And then, yeah, with the whole decanting thing, I never thought about that before.
Yeah, so it's decanting, but also there's a lot of, a lot of creatures and natural vegetation are going to be set high and dry because this water is being held back from a previous rainy season, so it's sitting high.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people break it open prematurely, it's usually during sunny weather when the kids want to get out there. And so because it's sunny, nice weather, it's very calm water, and it does stratify. You do get the deoxygenation of the lower levels. And so you release it, you decant it, and you take off the oxygenated water, and then it could be a fish kill off. You're stranding stuff in there. It could be a lake that people were paddling on fishing in, and now it's gone. So I don't know. I don't see, like, of course it's going to happen naturally, but when it happens naturally, it's usually during a stormy period,
mm-hmm.
and the water is being stirred up anyways because of the heavy rainfall.
Yeah.
The higher than normal flows coming from the rivers going into the ocean. So if it's happening naturally, it's happening naturally. And then that's the normal way to maintain the biodiversity. But if somebody wants to do it in the middle of summer when there's not a lot of rainfall and you got a lot of water held up, then it can be damaging.
Yep.
I don't want to be a killjoy or anything.
No, still, like I say,
educate yourself. You got to educate yourself.
It's when you're talking about going out on the water and stuff like that, paddling and whatnot, you see little sciencey tidbits like this. And you're like, that's pretty cool.
And also, that's the consequences.
Yeah. Right?
Everything has consequences. Think about consequences.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's all I got for this week.
I've got nothing to add.
You got nothing to add? Nothing?
I got nothing. I kind of went on a rant there with the iCalls, but it was when I was reading it, I was like one sentence in. It's like, I know what this is.
Yeah, and I must have heard, like, I've seen things like this, but never realized it was such a minor instance.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, so, like, I thought it was like just an everyday, ordinary, common thing. Yeah, all the water washed up and and blocked it off with a natural sand dam.
There's a place in Bowmanville that we hike all the time down on Lake Ontario, and the natural outflow, like, it changed. If there's a big storm in, the natural outflow moves, like, you know, 200 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And so this sandbar blocks off the Swampy Creek area and out into Lake Ontario. So it's after a storm, you see a lot of changes. So it's always interesting to walk down there because Lake Ontario is always getting a little bit bigger because of the north shore of Lake Ontario. It's a moraine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all that moraine rock and stone, we walk on the beach, me and Beckett collect rocks because there's always new rocks falling out onto the beach. And I shouldn't be talking about this. People are going to start
collecting all your rocks,
beachcombing and taking my rocks.
Right.
But anyways, there's this like in some places it's like 50, 80 feet high. And so it's a lot of natural stone and rock that falls down onto the beach after big storms. And so there's a lot to see, but also there's almost always water flowing out, but you can see that it's flowing. So the higher swamp area or creek or whatever, it's flowing into Lake Ontario. And it's only Lake Ontario changes level a lot too because of the Saunders Dam. So there's a lot of water control issues. Like in the spring, mm-hmm. Lake Ontario might be high. Mid to late summer, it kind of gets low. In the fall, they want to drain it down to compensate for, you know, runoff in the spring and so on. Anyways, it's neat to see all the changes on the shoreline.
Definitely is. Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, yeah. So this throw something all sciencey in there this week and something a bit different. But
yeah, I get my kicks out of the sciencey stuff.
Have you ever read a science book? You lie!
I spent money on science books.
I got science books in pristine condition. It's like they've never been opened or unwrapped.
When I went to college, there's a lot of books that we had to buy and it's like some of them are still pristine, brand new. It's like, why did the professor require that I buy that stupid $250 book?
Was his name on the front cover?
It was.
<Ba-dee>!
Yeah, exactly.
That's why.
Anyway.
Alrighty. So you got nothing else?
Nothing else.
Looking forward to getting out in the water this year.
Mm-hmm.
Got lots of things to do. I'm trying to get so much done right now so that I don't have to do it later in the summer.
have to build a canoe rack in my backyard.
I got to build one in my garage.
A roofed.
A better one.
A roofed canoe rack.
A roofed watercraft accommodation.
Yes. And I want to put it.
RWA.
It has to be freestanding. I'm thinking I can't plant it in the ground because I want to put it right up against the neighbor's fence. So if it's just freestanding and movable, he can't complain because it's not a structure.
Why don't you just put it in the neighbor's yard?
The neighbor doesn't use part of her yard. I thought about it because behind his gazebo, there's a large area that would fit about four or five canoes. It's like, he's not using that. It might take him years to realize I'm storing canoes in there.
Right? Put some camouflage over them.
And he doesn't listen to this podcast, so.
$20 and I don't go knock on his door.
Yeah, exactly.
Alrighty. Well, nice to be back.
Yes, yes.
If you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes. And this is episode number 475.
Ooh.
Getting there. Only 25 more episodes, buddy. Yep. You can download or stream our episodes, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites, or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all the episodes from there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.